Welcome to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knots so that you don't have to. I'm Ludmila Yamalova, a U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. And in each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights that you can actually use. But today, we're taking a sharp turn towards a real-life case study, one involving a luxury car, a massive fire, and an even bigger fight with insurance company. Please note, all names of individuals, car brands, and companies in this episode have been changed to protect the privacy of those involved. Any resemblance to real entities is purely coincidental. Now, let's start with the case. Imagine this. You've just bought a brand new luxury car, fresh from the showroom, worth about 3 million dirhams, and in US dollars, it's almost $1 million. You've taken out a comprehensive insurance coverage, the kind that's supposed to protect you from any and all risks, including fire, theft, and accidental damage. You've even made sure that your car registration is in order. But then the disaster strikes. While your brand new car is being shipped to Europe from Dubai, it catches fire inside a cargo container at the Dubai International Airport. The car is, for the most part, destroyed since it caught fire. Naturally, you expect your UAE-based insurance company to cover the damage. Instead, you are met with resistance, evasion, and a series of illogical arguments designed to avoid payment. We were forced to take the insurance company to court, not once, not twice, but all the way to the Court of Cassation to get our client the justice he was promised. This is a story not just about a car, but about a systematic failure in insurance accountability and a client who had to fight for his rights every step of the way. So now let's start with the car. The car is brand new car, as I mentioned earlier, worth more than 3 million dirhams, almost $1 million. And luxury car, let's call it Velocini. So it's full insured with a comprehensive coverage from, let's call it Nebula Insurance. And insurance is as comprehensive as it comes. Clearly says there's no exclusions, fully comprehensive, covers all of the UAE. The insurance company is a UAE-based company and registered properly in the UAE, and the car is obviously bought and registered in the UAE as well. So the purchase of the car company took place early January of 2022. We're now in 2025, so the reason we're actually talking about this story is because we just finally collected compensation for the fire. So fast forward almost 3 years. So the fire took place in January 2022, the car was purchased early January 2022, and just a few weeks later, the fire also happened in the same month. While the car was actually being shipped to Europe, somehow it caught fire while in the container during the cargo handling, just a few weeks after it was purchased inside a container at the Dubai International Airport. As is the case with perhaps in other jurisdictions in the West, certainly with insurance company, especially when you have insurance. I mean, the reason you get insurance is to give you the confidence and certainty that in the event something happens, the insurance company covers compensation and whatever the compensation may be. If it's a repairable damage, then they will cover the compensation to fix or to repair the damage. If it's irreparable damage, then it's a compensation for the full value of the item. So that's ultimately how insurance works and the purpose of the insurance. And in other jurisdictions, in the West in particular, certainly in the U.S., anytime anything like this happens, it's a more or less an administrative matter. Insurance company is just all you need to show is just, well, there's a fire happened. Here's my insurance. And so the company covers. And then it's the matter or the burden is on that insurance company to decide whether it wants, so to speak, there's a legal term called subrogate, whether it wants to seek compensation, reimbursement from some other company that might have been involved. So for example, let's say the logistics company or transportation company in this case, let's say they made a mistake. The way, generally speaking, insurance works is that, you know, since insurance covers that particular vehicle and the vehicle now catches fire, it doesn't matter who created or caused the problem. First, the job of the insurance company is to provide compensation to the insured and then figure out who it is that might have been at fault and then seek reimbursement accordingly. I mean, that's all, more or less how it functions in the West. And so it's the client who was actually, you know, a European client. Had, you know, when the fire happened, he was very matter of fact about it. He's like, okay, well, that's unfortunate, but I've got full comprehensive insurance. The car is brand new, literally straight off the showroom and into basically the cargo container. So I've got full insurance, so it's just going to be a no big deal. The company will cover it. And that was, again, remember, we were in January. And then for the next almost 6 months, this is before we came into the picture, he went back and forth, the client that is, with the insurance company, trying to ultimately get compensated. It kind of went around in circles. There was the insurance company was pointing fingers to the logistics company and the airport. The airport and logistics company were pointing fingers at the insurance company. Everybody was pointing fingers at everybody else, except no one wanted to take responsibility to provide for compensation. So the client basically was left stuck in an endless loop of referrals and excuses. And the insurance company, this again, before we came into the picture, initially sort of appeared kind of cooperative, almost friendly with the client. But really, their tactic was more of a deflection than actual effective cooperation, let alone assistance. As is kind of typical of certain people in the industry, they sort of made client believe that they were on his side and that, in fact, that he should be going after other companies to try to get compensation. Among other things, they even proposed to him that he should actually get the car fixed. But let's not forget, this is a brand new car, luxury car. We're talking about a car that's worth about $1 million. It just catches fire. So how can you? I mean, a car like that, even if you fix it, it will never be the same. So in a way, a car of that caliber, if it catches fire, basically becomes, in legal terms, a total car, a total asset, which means that under insurance coverage, and in this insurance coverage also in particular, is if a car is basically total or is not salvageable, then the insurance company's obligation is to pay the full value of whatever is mentioned in the insurance policy. And the insurance policy, what's mentioned, is the actual value of the car at the time of purchase, which was about 3 million dirhams. Under normal circumstances, and perhaps other jurisdictions, more established jurisdictions, perhaps with more regulated insurance industry, that's basically what would happen. And it would happen more or less by default without any protracted legal battles. But in this case, and certainly in no other sort of more established economies or jurisdictions, so would insurance company offer for a client to go and fix a car that just caught fire and call it good. But that's basically, these were kind of the tactics of this insurance company. They just kept telling the client that, yeah, they're on his side, and then he should seek some other redress except for the one that he actually by default should have been entitled to, and that is for the same insurance company reimbursing him for the value, the full value of the car. Obviously exhausted and frustrated, the client engages our law firm. And then at that point, we took over the communications and ultimately had to pursue legal actions. It's quite interesting because the tactic of the insurance company itself, refused to cooperate with us from the outset. And they rejected any kind of request for any sort of formal documents, including the policy itself. And think about it, whenever you have insurance policy, I mean, there's an agreement, there's actually a document that sort of supports the T's and C's or terms and conditions that that outline the coverage, the full coverage of the policy and any kind of exclusions, if any. And so what all we were asking is that, can we please have a full copy of the insurance agreement and insurance policy with all the T's and C's? And they didn't just ignore us. They basically made it sound like, you know, we had no business in even, how dare we, the audacity that we had to ask for these kind of documents from the insurance company. So I mean, there was a very unproductive, discourse. And they were very much on the defensive the whole time and sort of acted like they could do no wrong and we could do no right. So they tried to kind of bypass us by contacting the client directly and once again trying to steer him in a different direction towards fixing the car. Sort of would sabotage, you know, sort of us as his legal representatives in every possible way, and indicating or to trying to convince the client we did not know what we're doing. And it's quite interesting. And the reason I kind of go into these details is because, unfortunately, that kind of conduct in this part of the world with these kinds of matters is all too typical. And it does happen more often than one would expect, and not just in the insurance industry, but in general speaking, because obviously we mediate and then manage a lot of business transactions. And this sort of conduct, this kind of arrogance, this sort of aura of arrogance and this attitude of dismissal is just happens all too often. And it's ironic because in most cases when parties act that way, they act because there's actually legally, they don't have the basis or the foundation to stand in order to sort of back up their assertions or their, you know, their behavior. So the more sort of aggressive, the more dismissive they are, it's almost like the more guilty they are. So, you know, I know this because I've been in this business for a very long time. I've been in this part of the world for a long time. So I sort of recognize that. Being said, it's unpleasant for anyone, and it's utterly counterproductive. And the reason it's important to highlight this is because obviously this, we're not talking about, I'm not talking about a toaster that caught fire. We're talking about a luxury car, a massive asset. You know, for a lot of people, the asset of this value, it's this entire people's sort of life savings or life worth. You can buy properties, multiple properties for this amount of money. So we're not talking about a small or immaterial asset. And you know, from the client's perspective, he had done everything right. He bought it from a reputable dealer. It was a brand new car. He had all the documents. He obtained this insurance policy through the same dealer because it was being recommended by the dealer. So he didn't go and look for the cheapest insurance. So in his mind, he ticked all the boxes, and it should have just been an administrative and a simple matter where insurance company just accepts the obligation. That's the only obligation, by the way, that insurance companies have. Because if you think about it, what's the obligation of an insurance company is to compensate, right? Is to provide compensation to the insured. That's the obligation. They have no other purpose. So for the client, this was going to be a fairly kind of a simple and shut case, except that it didn't happen so. And he was shocked, and then we were shocked and disappointed, although we should have been more prepared for this. So we tried to obviously mediate it before taking a formal course of action, because you still want to believe that you can reason with someone, because in other countries, as I mentioned earlier, this would have been no brainer. It would have been resolved within the first few weeks, if at most. But once we realized that dialogue was completely ineffective and sort of hit a wall. So we decided to take legal actions, which is the only thing we could do. And as per the UAE law, the way to start a case against an insurance company is to file first a complaint with the Insurance Dispute Resolution Committee. And that's basically governed by the UAE's Cabinet Decision number 58 of 2020. So a fairly new law that ultimately sets out this framework. Whenever you have insurance claim, you first go to the Insurance Committee, Dispute Resolution Committee, and hope that they resolve the claim. And ultimately, if they don't, then you have to proceed to court. So we had to do that. So we filed the claim. Since we're talking about the incident happened in 2022, this particular law was introduced in 2020. The dispute resolution committee was set up kind of in that sort of shortly before then. It was still still sort of evolving and developing. And so the whole process was a little opaque in the sense of what were we supposed to submit and how the proceedings were supposed to take place and what kind of documents or burden which each party was supposed to carry. So just in terms of the timeline, the fire happened, or the car was purchased early January. The fire happened later in that January. And then so for about 6 months, the client kept going back and forth with the insurance company. Remember, during this time, not only is he minus 3 million dirhams out of his pocket, he also doesn't have the value of the car. And also he had already spent money on the transportation logistic companies that were supposed to move the car to Europe. Plus, he's paying, obviously, legal expenses to try to unwind this legal debacle. And then we finally filed complaint with the insurance committee, which was end of August. So this is almost 8 months into the process. And in September, after fairly, innocuous and kind of inconsequential sort of proceedings, because we submitted a document and there wasn't really much of a discourse or exchange or engagement with the committee itself. So the claim was ultimately rejected or closed. It was not rejected. It was closed, allegedly because we had not submitted the proof of damage and repair costs, even though the car was clearly totaled. So that's what I'm saying. So I think the committee at that point in time was still developing, because this sort of burden, a supposed burden of proof that was put on the claimant was a bit, wasn't documented or memorialized any specific law or regulations. And it wasn't quite clear how do you prove damage and repair costs beyond photos of a burnt car. And the repair costs, if you don't need to repair the car, or if the car is irreparable, how do you prove that? So there wasn't really much opportunities to kind of to debate the issue or to discuss it further. And so the insurance committee closed it. And one of the other things that came up was that they wanted to see, and that's another nuance that just to keep in mind for anybody who goes through this process, is that we didn't even have the full police report about the incident. So when the car caught fire, because it happened at Dubai airport, so it was at Dubai police that was sort of attached to Dubai airport, had conducted an investigation and issued a report. But all that the client had was basically like a one-pager document that documented that when the fire took place and that the police came, investigated, and determined that the car caught fire. But we didn't have the full report. And so that was the other thing that we were trying to produce or have a copy of for the committee, for the insurance committee to submit. But it was not so easy for us to even obtain that particular document from the police, because it was a bit of a circled argument, because the police was saying, well, they will give us the report if we have a request from the court or from the authorities. But the authorities were saying we're not going to review your file until we have the police report. So a bit of a circular argument. So we kind of went back and forth that way. And so ultimately, in September, when the insurance closed the complaint, without any kind of resolving it. By the way, the purpose of the insurance committee, it's twofold. One, it can actually sort of mediate the dispute and ultimately and kind of bring parties together and hopefully sort of resolve the issue, or can actually also issue a decision. So in this case, there wasn't, since there wasn't kind of a decision or any settlement made, and the committee considered that we had not submitted enough documents, such as, document that the car required repairs beyond the photos. So the case was closed, and we chose not to appeal this or challenge it, and instead go to court. So So now we're fast forward to December 2022, which is now a year after the car was purchased. We first filed the court of first instance. And let me just kind of give you a quick snapshot of what took place from there on. And then we can drill down a little bit in the specific nuances to kind of help you see the different turns, twists and turns that we went through. And just something to kind of be on the lookout if anyone ever finds themselves in this unfortunate scenario having to fight with insurance company. So we filed the case. So in the UAE, you have in the courts, you have three levels. Of course, you have the court of first instance, court of appeal, and court of cassation. Without getting into sort of too much legal nuances, but the Emirate of Dubai has its own legal system. So our court of cassation is the final court. So you have the court of first instance, the court of appeals, and the court of cassation. So this is our final court. Now, Abu Dhabi has its own legal system in terms of the courts, and you know, the Emirates have their own. So but for purposes of Dubai, that's so we went as high as one could go, which is to the court of cassation. So there was, at a high level, the court issued decisions in our favor from the beginning. However, the decisions were not satisfactory to us. So the court of first instance issued a partial decision in our favor, but only partially compensating us for the value of the car. The court of appeals sort of kind of adjusted that value, but only again partially. So in our position was, again, this is a brand new car. There's a brand new insurance. It's a fully full and comprehensive insurance. There are no exclusions. Car caught fire, obviously, in a neutral grounds. It's a neutral place being by airports. So it's not like it wasn't being driven negligently and such. So therefore, we requested compensation for the full. So we considered the car to be totaled, and therefore required compensation for the full value of what the car was insured for, which was for 3 million dirhams. So that our position was, we don't want the remnants of the car. We don't want to fix the car. We just want just the full value of the insurance coverage, and and that's basically, and you can keep the car. Plus, we requested also damages for loss of value, loss of the car, loss of and then having the rental. Having to pay for rental car and so on and so forth. So there's kind of two claims, but the two requests. But the main request was that we don't want anything to do with this car. We just want the full value of what the car is insured for, which is the 3 million dirhams. Now, ironically enough, the court of first instance, there's so many other twists and turns, but one of the arguments that they made was that, okay, well, they'll give us compensation for the remainder of the compensation, offsetting the current value of the burnt car. Personally specifically, so the car, let's say it's valued at 3 million dirhams as per the insurance policy. Now they had their experts that the court had appointed had determined that the car in its current burnt state was worth, let's say, 1.5 million. So then the court only gave us, let's say, 1.5 million. So it was kind of, that was one of the arguments that was made. So obviously that's not a satisfactory argument for us. But kind of taking a step back again in terms of the timeline. So this was December 2022. We filed the first court case, and there was experts were being appointed, and there's two experts, an insurance expert and an engineering expert, which, by the way, is also important for anybody who's going through this to understand. So in UAE, the court proceedings, in almost all cases, it's very customary that the court appoints experts. And basically, the job of the experts is to determine factual elements of a case. So in this case, the court appointed two experts, one an insurance expert, and the other one is the technical expert. So technical expert was to determine basically what happened to the car and ultimately, and among other things, what caused the fire. And then the insurance expert was basically, in terms of the insurance, what's the value of the car and what the coverage should be. And it was kind of an interesting exercise, because if you think about the engineering or the technical expert that had to go and inspect the car that was already a year in storage after it caught fire, for someone like a single person to go and try to determine what caused fire in the highly sophisticated luxury car, it's not really realistic. It's, you know, it's not a task that is suited or practical for a single person to go and sort of look at the surface of the car and decide, okay, this is what caught fire. I mean, it's a highly sophisticated machine, right? But one of the things we had submitted is that there were similar incidents of fire. So this very, very type of car of this specific brand actually had caught fires before, has the history of catching fires out of nowhere. So we had even submitted reports from other courts in other jurisdictions, the U.S. in particular, and from a technical expert in the U.S. about the specific model of the car having had these kinds of issues. So obviously there's some sort of a construction or a product defect, right? It's basically a defective car. In the U.S., we call them a lemon car. Here's the basic car, it's a lemon. So it's basically defective because of how it's constructed. I mean, this happens a lot, and car manufacturers know about it. And they, and whenever there is a car is deemed a lemon, I mean, car manufacturers and insurance companies right away just offer compensation without any kind of negotiations, and not only compensation but also additional compensation for kind of the hassle of having to deal with this. So that's just kind of how a lot of in more sort of developed jurisdictions with insurance, more developed insurance industries, that's how these kinds of incidents are handled, in particular with cars, and especially cars that are considered lemon cars. So in, you know, perhaps some may disagree, but that would be a classic example of a lemon car, because this specific car, brand new car, catches fire on its own, and there are other incidents in this very, very same car catching fire as well, and having sort of litigation court cases involving the same with some technical reports. I mean, sort of the writing's on the wall. I mean, that was sort of my argument all along. Yeah, but this also caused quite a bit of internal debate within the team in terms of, you know, what could have caught fire. And from a legal standpoint, it doesn't matter what caught fire, as long as there wasn't some sort of a negligence by the insured himself, i.e. wasn't driving recklessly, didn't set the car on fire intentionally, as long as it wasn't anything like that, it doesn't matter what caught fire. So the insurance company has to cover, because once again, the only obligation of the insurance company is to basically provide coverage. And so they should have covered, and then it would have been up to them if they wanted to figure out whose fault it was and whether they should have actually covered this or not. And then they go and seek subrogation from whoever the other party is, what in this case would be the car manufacturer, for example. So the experts basically issued these kind of reports, which were prolonged the proceedings on the one hand. On the other hand, there were some interesting conclusions that were made that I'll discuss shortly. But ultimately, that sort of the experts, the court relied significantly on the experts' determinations about what caught fire, why the car caught fire, sort of what was the supposed alleged reason for the fire, and the sort of insurance experts' determination about what would be sort of reasonable compensation. So that finding of the court of first instance was not satisfactory to us. So we then appealed. We appealed, though the other side has appealed as well, because they didn't want to be held responsible for anything at all. So we appealed to the court So first of all, just in terms of the timing, we filed the case with the court of first instance at the end of December 2022, and in July of 2023, we received the judgment by the court of first instance. If you think about it, it's only 7 months, so actually not a very long period of time, which is quite notable and important to highlight, is that in sort of comparatively speaking, litigation proceedings in the UAE, especially these days, proceed much faster than they would in other countries. So that's the upside of it all. So it's only basically in 7 months. I mean, we already had a decision. It wasn't the decision we wanted, but it was already a decision. Although at that point in time, the client would have even been happy with that decision, because still he would have, there was certain compensation that was awarded to him, plus, you know, there's the remaining value of the car itself. But we had to appeal a number of sort of legal reasons. And then, so in August, we filed an appeal. So And then the appeal, so we, among other things, we requested for recalculation of compensation. And so that kind of also went back and forth for a few months. And the Court of First, the Court of Appeals has issued another decision, again, sort of confirming parts of the Court of First Instance decision and sort of updating some parts of it. But once again, it wasn't satisfactory to us. So I think in August, which is... In August, the court basically issued a decision, which is pretty fast, and again, was a partial award, only half of the value of the insurance policy. So then we filed a second appeal, which is the cassation, which is in September. So just kind of going back, the Court of First Instance was filed in December 2022. In July, we had the first judgment. Then in end of August, we filed the Court of Appeal, and then basically in September, so a year later, in fact. So that was August 2023, and then August 2024, the Court of Cassation issued a decision. So a whole year passed by for the Court of Cassation to issue a decision, and that's because, again, we had to go to the experts, and we had to submit more expert reports, and there was a car inspection report as well. So anyway, so there was a lot of going back and forth between the experts. That prolonged the proceedings. So once again, now we're at the Court of Appeals, and another year goes by. So Court of Appeals issues a decision a year later and issues us a partial award of about half of the value of the insured value, which is about $1.7 million. The client was seemingly happy as well, but that's not from a legal perspective. Again, that's not what we were asking for, and that was not a fair compensation, a fair judgment. It was not properly applying the law. That was our argument. And then finally, so we appealed that in September, and then end of September, and only 2 months later, the Court of Cassation finally issues a decision. So the first case lasted 7 months, which was quite quick. The second appeal was almost a year. And the third appeal, which is perhaps the most important appeal, that's the Court of Cassation, is only 2 months. So within 2 months, finally, the Court of Cassation issued a decision in fully in our favor, which is basically agreeing with our original position, which was that the car was a total, it was insured, properly insured, that the insurance had the obligation to cover the damage, and that the car was totaled for all intents and purposes, and therefore the insurance, as per the insurance policy, had to cover the full value of the car, which in this case was 3 million dirhams. So that was basically in November 2024. We have a final judgment. So when you have a Court of Cassation judgment, so at that point, you'd think the insurance company, after all of this kind of rigmarole, you know, having debating with us and questioning our claims that they were actually, they had the obligation to compensate the damage from that to the insurance committee, to the Court of First Instance, to the Court of Appeal, to the final Court of Cassation, and still now we have a final judgment, because the Court of Cassation is a final judgment. Now we have a final judgment, and still they're not complying with the judgment. So i.e. they're not paying the judgment. So you'd think by this point in time, you know, we've convinced them that they were wrong and that the law is pretty clear about their obligation to pay, and you know, there's not much left to argue. And even then, they don't pay. So it took us another eight to nine months to actually receive full payment. And we only did this once we've actually filed enforcement proceedings. And so in the UAE, the way it works is once you have a final judgment, if the party does not pay, then you can file. Within 30 days, you can file then the enforcement proceedings, through which you can start requesting for the bank accounts, for example, being frozen, for other assets being frozen, and not just frozen, because now you have a final judgment, a money judgment. So you can also ask for the first search of all the assets, and then whatever identifiable, especially liquid assets, your whatever money, i.e. money in the bank account, that money should be transferred to the court for the payment of the judgment. So we went through all of that. And it was like, finally, so when we finally got paid, it wasn't because the insurance company finally accepted, okay, yes, we lost. Now, by as per this court judgment, we have to pay 3 million dirhams, so here's the payment. No, we literally, we had to search for all of their bank accounts, whatever bank accounts we found. And the UAE sort of enforcement proceedings are actually quite effective and quite efficient these days, especially. So it's all very much centralized in terms of how they communicate with all the authorities, including banks. And whatever information comes from the bank goes straight to the courts. And so it's a very sort of a well-oiled machine by now. And so the bank submitted all the documents wherever this insurance company had bank accounts and not aware of whatever money they had. So eventually we found out the specific bank account had the sufficient amount of money to cover our judgment. And so as per that, we requested for that money to be transferred. So what happens in enforcement proceedings when a bank identifies that there's a specific, or the court vis-a-vis the bank identifies that the specific defendant has assets with a specific bank, then they freeze that. And then we make a request that whatever frozen money is transferred to the court. So basically, we had to do exactly that. So we had to, first the bank froze the amounts, or the whole bank account. Then we requested a specific amount of our judgment would be transferred to the court. It was transferred to the court. And then from there on, the court transfers the money to the client. So then, you know, once the money hit the account, it was a fairly quick process for the client to receive money from the court in his bank account. So here we are. So we're talking about a luxury asset that is clearly insured, as comprehensive as existed. There was nothing more to. It wasn't like there was this particular insurance company had some kind of additional coverage that we could have opted for. There was nothing like that. So we basically, the client had taken the full comprehensive insurance with all lock, stock, and barrels. So he had to go for almost 2.5 years to spend quite a bit on legal fees to try to seek justice, basically just, you know, get the other side that had the contracted with to comply with his obligations. That's all basically he was requesting. Okay, we signed an agreement. We had a deal. I bought insurance from you. You said as per this agreement, if there's the car has an issue, you will compensate to this value. I'm asking you to perform your obligation. And that took 2.5 years for him to finally achieve. And again, it was literally just through dragging the company through every possible bump on the road, including having to freeze its assets. And actually, literally, the court would seize the money from their bank account and brought it to the court's bank accounts and then transferred to the client. So they would not, they basically never accepted their obligation, which is quite unfortunate. But this is why it's important that we discuss this, because the point is, we just want to highlight that's basically that kind of behavior of insurance companies is, you know, it's all too real. This is a real example, and it's shocking given the asset we're talking about, the sort of comprehensive coverage of the policy. It's a local insurance. Everything happened here locally, so we should not have had to do any of this. And so here we are. Now, let me kind of go through. What's more interesting is just to kind of add cherry on top or add insult to injury is to talk about the legal arguments. I perhaps should not be using the word legal in this context, but the kind of arguments that insurance company raised in this case. And obviously, given what I've just told you about in terms of how long the proceedings took place, you could see that these arguments were sort of mulled over and discussed and debated and briefed in so many different ways. They're certainly very creative and just trying to think of any, come up with any excuse not to comply with their side of the bargain, not to pay. One argument, for example, was that the claim the client had switched to the export insurance. In other words, that this insurance had expired and then the client had bought an export insurance. These are such nonsensical arguments because they had no evidence of any of this. And as if you recall, there's only 2 weeks that passed by between the time that he bought the car and the accident happened. So the insurance policy had just been purchased only 2 weeks before. So why know, where the insurance company would have come up with this argument somehow this insurance had expired because the car was now being exported. So we had to provide the documents from RTA, which is the Road and Transport Authority in Dubai, that confirmed that the car was there was no export insurance and the car registration was still valid, and then there was full coverage because that was one of the other arguments they made, is that the client had deregistered the car from, and as such, this insurance somehow did not cover, or because you know, allegedly if he had deregistered, somehow the coverage would not have applied. Even that argument is not legally sound, but it had nothing to do with reality because the car was properly registered with RTA, and there was no deregistration. So that particular claim was false. But the extent to which the insurance company went through arguing this but you know, there's no basis for any of it. So it wasn't like there's any kind of evidence that just made these arguments. And this unfortunately happens all too often in legal proceedings here. So that's just something to put out there to kind of keep in mind, that if you ever find yourself going through this kind of process, don't be surprised. And so for the time being, you know, these kinds of tactics are not yet sanctioned or penalized by the courts, but I'm sure it's just a matter of time. So that was one argument, which was false, and we clearly showed that. The other argument was about the defect and exclusion argument. So they claimed that fire somehow was not covered by this insurance, and somehow it was excluded under the policy. And in the UAE, so what you have is you have a number of sort of laws, that insurance kind of related laws, and then you have what's called the unified insurance policy, so which applies to all the cars. And so that's what sort of, but there's a specific provision in the unified insurance policy, which kind of like a standard policy. It's you know, there's chapter 4. Somehow they were trying to claim that fire is excluded, which is nonsensical, because if you're going to insure a car, it's your fires in cars. You're given the cars are flammable vehicles, so a fire happens all too often. So for a motor insurance to exclude fires is obviously a nonsensical, and it certainly is not in the UAE unified policy. But yet that did not prevent the insurance company from making that argument that somehow because the car caught fire, that fire was excluded. They also argued the fire damage is sort of was not, you know, not because it was indirect loss. They had nothing else to point to. I mean, they just, these kind of arguments they make, and nothing to substantiate. So again, we had to argue and show basically the unified insurance policy, which does not have, first of all, it just clearly sets out what the exclusions are. A fire is not one. But more importantly, we also argued that there was nothing, it wasn't like we opted to exclude certain aspects of coverage. So there's nothing, we took as comprehensive coverage as existed. In other words, there's nothing else we could have, if we wanted to add, that was one of the other arguments they argued, is that we should have taken an additional fire insurance. First of all, nonsensical argument to begin with. Second of all, it doesn't exist, and we could not have even taken that kind of fire insurance because it doesn't exist. Yet, that argument was made. Then there was, that's sort of the second argument, kind of nonsensical argument. And then perhaps my favorite argument was that that the airport is not a road. And then the insurance only covers incidents that happen on the road. And since the airport is not, according to the insurance company, is not a road, it's kind of off-road, or so therefore it's outside of coverage. So this was sort of legally and logically incorrect. But effectively what they're saying is the Dubai airport is not in Dubai. So it's not, you know, it's basically, it's outside of the UAE. And therefore outside of the coverage, because it's, you know, the coverage covers all of the UAE. It says all of the UAE. So if you're saying the Dubai airport is not covered by it, you're basically saying the Dubai airport is not in the UAE. And so that was kind of the argument that they made. And by the way, the expert was also who had made that argument, the insurance expert, which was quite shocking. Suggested Dubai is not part of the UAE was certainly noted by the Court of Cassation, and the Court of Cassation gave a pretty scathing review of the Court of Appeals and the Court of First Instance on this very point. You know, just that sort of almost like mocked the lower courts about them accepting this argument as being anything but, you know, but ridiculous. So that was perhaps my favorite argument, which thankfully the final of the Court of Cassation saw the absurdity of it, and added again that to argue ultimately that Dubai somehow is not part of the UAE, and therefore, you know, anything that happens at Dubai Airport is excluded from the coverage. So that was the kind of a third argument, if you want. So another argument was the failure to prevent fire. So they blamed again the party, the insured, on preventing the fire. So they somehow alleged that the client failed to take reasonable precautions on preventing the fire. Remember, the car, brand new car, being basically transported by a logistic company and put into a cargo in the Dubai airport, and sort of on its own catches fire, and somehow, I mean, the client is at fault. But as I mentioned earlier, like, that should have been, like, is even inconsequential. Even if the client somehow, let's say, left the car running in this container, let's say, still the insurance company has the obligation to cover. If the car catches fire, they still have the obligation to cover. But unless there was an intentional fire. So anyway, so that was the other argument, and pretty baseless, especially since the car was basically in a locked cargo container. So how the client, in its kind of a restricted area, so the client didn't even have access to it. So to accuse the client of somehow sabotaging the car or somehow causing this fire was, you know, again, another nonsensical argument. Then it also blamed the logistics company. They blamed the logistics company that basically had transported the car, somehow was at fault. But once again, you know, even if that were true, so it's the job of the insurance company is to compensate the insured as per the policy and then seek redress or seek compensation, subrogation from whatever other parties they might have. They might believe were at fault. So what should have happened and how it would work or would happen in other countries is that they would just cover the insured, and then if they would hire their own inspectors and figure out exactly what caused that fire, and then basically would leave the insured out. But this is the whole point of the insurance, is exactly that. And then if they determined, for example, there was a logistics company that was at fault, then they should have then filed a case against the logistics company and sought compensation that way. That's how normally it works. So that was the other argument. And then, you know, the final argument is that, well, the car was not a total loss, right? Is that the damage was repairable, and referencing basically a sort of kind of untranslated, like, repair quotes, you know, that, you know, we're talking about a brand new luxury car that just caught fire. The chassis caught fire. So it's like, how you can repair a car like that is sort of beyond me. But that was obviously another argument that they're trying to hammer, is just that, okay, well, even if I have to cover, we just want to cover the damage or the repair costs. And finally, the Court of Cassation also saw through this very point and said, no, absolutely not. So first of all, the insurance is all comprehensive. It does no exclusions. The fires are not excluded under the unified policy, motor policy. The car was in good standing. The registration was active. The insurance was active. And it's obvious that the car, the chassis, when the chassis catches fire, it's obvious that the car of this caliber with this kind of an incident is nothing but a total loss. And therefore, it should be fully compensated. So finally, the Court of Cassation ultimately kind of confirmed all of our original arguments and was quite satisfying at the end, because it wasn't just that they confirmed our original arguments, but it was their comments about the lower courts and the experts' findings. They were quite rewarding for us legal professionals, because that was sort of what we had argued all along. And what we had argued all along was in line with the UAE law all along. So we had been citing in the laws and the Unified Motor Vehicle Insurance Policy and the various judicial precedents. it was satisfying at the end to actually have our sanity confirmed. But just at a kind of a high level, so in arguing all this, we had to rely on a number of legal references. And so without kind of getting into too nitty-gritty discussion of legal authorities, but you know, one of the main laws that applies here is the UAE Civil Code and certain specific articles from 1026 to 1030, where basically state the insurer's duty to compensate regardless of third-party fault, for example, right? So the specific law, specific clause in the law that clearly sets out exactly what we had argued. And then also article, for example, 1037, also states that fire, accident, and total loss are clearly covered. So once again, we weren't making up law. We were just citing the same law. But an insurance company would think that they should have been aware of all this law, and this should not have had to be debated in this protracted legal track. And then also in the so the beside of the Unified Motor Vehicle Insurance Policy and the Chapter 4 in particular, that clearly clarifies exclusions and clearly states that this no exclusions applied in this particular case. So that's another legal reference. Again, we weren't really making, unlike the insurance company, we're not making up any kind of arguments, and we in fact were citing specific legal references. And then there's another sort of cabinet decision, number 58 of 2020, that basically outlines the authority of the insurance committee as sort of playing a role in these kind of insurance disputes. And that's why this is important to highlight here, and kind of also goes going back to why we started the way we started, in terms of starting with the court, with insurance committee first before going to court. So by law in the UAE, that's kind of the process we have to follow. And let me just kind of put a footnote on that specific point, is that the law has changed since then in 2023, where it now clearly sets that for any insurance complaints or disputes, it starts first with insurance committee, though it's been kind of rebranded and now put under the central bank. But the decision by the insurance committee now, as per the new law, is equivalent to the decision of the court of first instance. So if that decision is not acceptable to the parties, then they have to file a decision with the court of appeals. So you no longer go to the court of first instance, you go straight to the court of appeals. So in a way, it shortens the process. So now the laws have been updated to kind of shorten the process and make it more efficient in terms of seeking redress. So I guess that's one sort of positive development that we have seen in legislative terms since then. And then also in terms of kind of the final legal authorities or references we relied on, it was the various judicial precedents. And there were a number of judicial precedents or judicial court cases where sort of not quite exactly identical findings were made, but the arguments that we were making had already been made and by the highest level, with the highest court. So cumulatively, if you look at it from a legal standpoint as a lawyer, it was a very simple case. It should not have been anything complicated, because we didn't have to make up law. We didn't have to come up with creative arguments. We didn't have to stretch the envelope, so to speak. It was all, the law is pretty clear and the specific provisions that clearly cover. So you have the law that clearly cover the incident, and we have the policy, the insurance policy, our own policy, that was also very clear. So it's all very, very clear, very detailed. And so all we're doing is just referring back to the language of the law, the language of the policies. And unfortunately, it took this process from the insurance committee to the three different court cases to ultimately for the final and the highest court to finally agree with our position and ultimately enforce the law. At the end, just to kind of sum it up, you know, the Court of Cassation issued compensation for the 3 million dirham award plus compensation for all the court fees and the court expenses, not the legal expenses, because those are not recoverable in the UAE local courts, but the court fees and the interest as well. So that was also recoverable in addition to the 3 million dirhams. The court also recognized, which is quite important, is that a luxury car cannot be economically restored after a fire. So that was quite important, because that was the whole point of a concept of a total loss. And therefore the car's total loss was beyond dispute, and so it should not have even been debated. So in other words, again, not to toot our own horn, but the Court of Cassation, the way it was, is a very beautiful judgment, because in the way it acknowledged this, all these arguments that had been made before and discussed and debated and briefed at the previous two court levels with the different experts were basically inconsequential. They should not have been debated, such as, for example, the court said the car's total luxury car cannot be economically restored after a fire, and therefore the car's total loss was beyond dispute. It didn't even need to be debated, as was also the case about Dubai Airport being inside the UAE and therefore covered by the insurance policy. Should not have been debated. So it was not a super long judgment, the cassation judgment, but it was very satisfying the way that it addressed all the points and pointed out the sort of the shortcomings of the lower courts and the experts' conclusions and findings that were inconsistent ultimately with the country's laws. And as I mentioned earlier, despite this judgment, we still had to go and seek enforcement of the case and go to the point of having to freeze their bank accounts and freeze their license also, even the company's license, just to be able to get them to pay. And at the end, they still didn't come forward. They still did not not just acknowledge liability, but didn't even want to pay. So we had to kind of do it ourselves and grab the money from their bank accounts and settle the judgment. So that's basically kind of that's the end of the saga, so to speak. But in terms of just the summary of arguments and the timeline, there was this misstatement of laws, right? There was a misstatement of laws that the insurance company had engaged in. There was procedural stalling and just overall disrespectful conduct. And so the legal proceedings took 2 years plus from the from the time of the fire to actually through almost 3 years to the final payment. And so obviously without legal intervention, the client would have received nothing, because that's what he had experienced for the first 6 months of him trying to negotiate this with the insurance company. And just as the facts later had clearly shown, that the insurance company never had the intention to pay. So in conclusion, obviously, this case is a cautionary tale for policyholders in the UAE. So even high-value, fully compliant policies are subject to denial often. So insurers may act in bad faith and use kind of gray legal arguments and to delay or escape liability. And sort of without persistent legal action, the system sometimes favors insurers and not the insured. So that's just something to keep in mind. But the most important is that the law is clear, and the law is on the side of the insured or the victim, one, and then two, that even if sort of at the lower levels, you meet some bumps, the Court of Cassation is kind of the ultimate authority, and they do apply the law clearly and effectively, and the country's laws are pretty clear. So we hope also that as part of this particular case, and this is also one of the idea of sharing the story with you on this podcast, is that this will signal a shift or a change in the insurance policy's conduct, because it's not really, it doesn't suit anybody. It's not it's anybody's interest for insurance companies to act this way, because the whole idea of insurance is to avoid exactly that. And it's just because everything they did was so improper and so specifically against very, very explicit provisions in the law, as the Court of Cassation had ultimately ruled. So it's like, why? Like, why go through all of this? So we do hope that this signals a change. And although the UAE is a civil law jurisdiction, which means it's not common law, it's not sort of specifically bound by the court precedents, in practice, the courts here do look at the precedents and they do rely on their own precedents. So we do hope that we, by virtue of litigating this case, we also created our own precedent. And moving forward, the courts will, and the insurance companies in particular, will rely on this precedent as law, and therefore act more responsibly in the future in terms of honoring their obligations under the policy. So that's all for this episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you found this episode useful and you like what we do, you can always find more on our website, which is lylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.